Hello, and welcome back to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Hani Holzer.
And today, we're here to talk to you some more about anxiety in your children and how to help them with it.
We've already established that anxiety can be very normal in childhood because there are so many firsts in a childhood, that there are so many new events to anticipate. And I think what we're talking a little bit more about today is when it's more than normal worry. What is more than normal worry?
Right. I think the key aspect of that is when worry gets in the way of functioning. If a child is so worried about going to school that they get a stomach ache and they insist on staying home.
Yes.
Or if every time the parents try to go out on the evening for a couple of hours,
the child throws themselves in front of the front door.
Or gets sick and starts throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when it gets in the way, or a child who, won't go to a friend's party or can't do a sleepover, or who, worries so much about things that it keeps them up at night.
Right. It's really getting in the way of them being able to be children.
Right. And getting in the way of their social, academic, or emotional development. And we don't want their worry or anxiety to be so severe that it really gets in the way of being children and growing up properly.
And there are a lot of skills that can be taught so that they can manage their own worries and fears and cut them down slowly over time and feel successful at managing their own anxiety.
Yeah, and I think that irrespective of where the anxiety comes from, these skills really can be very helpful. Now, some children are just more, we've talked about, some kids are wired more anxious and are more prone to developing problems with anxiety.
So would you say that anxiety can run in families then?
Absolutely. And often tends to. But, sometimes there's a combination of predisposition and learned factors. And part of the problem is that if you have an anxious mother, they're not only genetically your child might be more predisposed, but learning-wise, if I'm anxious, then I'm going to inevitably, my child is going to see my anxiety and learn from it. So these are things that we as parents have to become aware of in order to help our children not become so anxious, because two children exposed to the exact same events mm-hmm. might interpret them very differently. So even though the environmental aspects might be the same, the exposure is the same, psychologically how they interpret it and what impact it has on them can be very different.
The interesting thing about the anxiety piece running in families is I have, over the course of these past several years, have had some mothers come into me with their own anxiety. And sure enough, 2-3 years later, I'm seeing, a 10-year-old of theirs, an 11-year-old of theirs, the apple and the tree don't fall too far apart from each other. And I'm so impressed with these mothers because a lot of what they say is that they suffered so much themselves at A, not knowing what was wrong with them when they were growing up and feeling terrible about it and having been in so much of their own private pain around their fears and their worries that they see it when it starts bubbling up in their children and they don't want them to suffer that way alone and in silence without skills, without a way of dealing with it, that they bring them in.
Yeah, and I think it's great because with the proper training and skills, it's really teaching your child the skills it takes to manage their anxiety so that they don't have to be so nervous.
Right, it's so nervous, and I think I want to add the word in there, powerless. Because when you're powerless, you can feel extremely anxious.
So what type of children are really prone to anxiety? Can we sort of predict with certain children that they might have more of a problem? Who should I watch out for?
I think you should watch out for the child who overthinks things, who's a big thinker.
Okay.
They often overthink things so much that they move themselves right into the worry category almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. In other words, well, like the sensitive child.
The sensitive child, exactly.
The one who gets insulted easily, or the one who...
The one who also feels other people's pain exquisitely, more so than, you know, your average child.
It's really a two-edged sword, because in many ways, anxious children are often more empathic children. They're often children who understand others better because they're just more sensitive to others' needs.
And they usually also display a social and emotional maturity above and beyond their years.
Right. It's, you know, having this sensitivity is a very positive thing, but often makes kids, is one of the things that can make kids more prone to anxiety. Well, let's just get into the meat of things. When kids start to worry, what exactly happens? Okay, how do they worry?
I think, you know, sometimes what happens, one of the first things that happens is there's a preoccupation with the thought. They can't stop thinking about a certain thing.
Such as, you know, robbers are coming into my house?
Such as robbers are coming into my house.
Okay.
You know, flying on an airplane. The social piece, being with my friends, they can get really stuck in those places.
Okay. And what happens when they get preoccupied? How does that affect them? I mean, why so bad about thinking about something a lot?
Well, part of it is that they distort the reality.
Okay. In other words, they start worrying about things. You know, they're worried about robbers, even though that's not reality. The reality isn't that there are robbers coming all the time.
Right, or they worry about their friendships, and then they start feeling like, I have no friends and nobody likes me.
Okay. I think the other part of that is that, you know, especially like in school, if they're preoccupied with a worry, they're not going to focus as well on school. It's going to affect their learning.
Right, they become extremely internally preoccupied and distracted from what's going on around them.
Right. Another thing that can happen, I think, is kids become what we call hypervigilant. They're so sensitive and looking for something bad to happen that they can't relax. And they get literally physically anxious. So, and that can really lead to somatic physical symptoms.
Stomach aches and headaches, and they can get constipated.
And feel like they have a lump in their throat or butterflies in their stomach.
Or feel like they're going to cry any minute.
So there are all sorts of, there are a whole bunch of physical symptoms that kids sometimes get. And very often, parents will be taking the child to the doctor for their physical ailments on multiple occasions until they finally realize that it's not a physical problem.
Right, or sometimes they don't realize it, and it's just a lot of treating symptoms without realizing that there's a lot underneath the symptoms. So when the fifth grader is having chronic stomach aches or chronic headaches, it's really a great idea to go to the doctor, to check it out, to go to the eye doctor to see if maybe, well, maybe it is time for eyeglasses. But if that's not the case, then there's something else going on.
Typical worries, okay, that kids have then are things like they're afraid of being in the dark, okay? Afraid they're going to be late and someone's going to notice, or they're afraid of being meeting new people and they're going to be embarrassed.
Right, or they're afraid of getting lost, or they're afraid of getting hurt, or very often children are afraid of getting sick, because the ultimate fear and anxiety for a lot of these children is, believe it or not, death. Worrying about their death, worrying about their parents' death. So they're terribly, terribly frightened about getting sick or any of their family members getting sick.
And a lot of them are afraid of the dark or afraid of being alone.
And because they're sensitive, also a lot of them are worry about how they look. I don't want to look different than the other kids because then nobody's going to like me. It's this whole cyclical way of thinking.
And so when they have issues like this, you know, they'll sometimes withdraw, right? If they're afraid they're going to be embarrassed among their friends, or they're going to do something wrong, or they're not going to, they'll sometimes want to avoid. They'll either avoid school or just avoid going into social events with their friends, or avoid a sleepover and so forth.
These are the kids who often become bookworms. They're bright, they're interested, but they're afraid to engage. So they withdraw and they'll read their books, or they'll, you know, play on their computers.
And sometimes they're so bothered by their, you know, these worries that they'll just try to distract themselves. And then you wonder why they're, you know, they seem to just play video games or watch TV all the time. They don't want to do anything else because they want to do something that's going to keep their brain occupied and they don't have to think.
And it's actually not a bad coping mechanism, except that it probably becomes extreme and is no longer a good coping mechanism. Because it could be part of a group of coping mechanisms, but if isolation is the only coping mechanism, isolation is never good.
And for some kids with anxiety, it really affects their behavior. Some kids with anxiety, they start being inappropriate in the classroom or with friends or start bullying other kids.
Why is that?
Well, because the sense, I think, of helplessness, and they want to get some sense of control.
Mm-hmm.
Kids really respond to in very different, disparate ways. And it's not always easy to predict. And depending on the nature of the child, they're going to respond to their anxiety. They're going to have to figure out a way to cope.
So it can be complex and tricky, that's for sure.
Okay. So now the question is, how do you help your child when they're feeling really anxious, when it's affecting their going to school, it's affecting their learning, it's affecting their friendships? What do you do to help them?
Well, I think one of the things that we talked about earlier was the whole somatic piece. You know, children who have the stomach aches, the headaches, the back aches, the aches and pains, the malaise, I'm not feeling well. A lot of those somatic, you know, bodily issues can often be helped by something very simple. It's called relaxation. What is relaxation? It's not sitting in front of the TV and you know, surfing the channels. That's not relaxation. That's zoning out. And that's avoidance. And that's utter distraction. Relaxation is something entirely different. It's about being able to take your mind, your body, connect both, and calm yourself, soothe yourself. And the people who I see, whether they're adults or children, who are coming in for some sort of work around anxiety that's overwhelming them, is I teach them very simply to get in touch with their own breath, just to breathe normally through their nose, but to be mindful and to pay attention to their breathing, just to focus on that. And that alone automatically lowers, slows blood pressure, heart rate, and brings a little bit more of a calm to the mind and the body. And then we go from there to taking a mental body scan while they're breathing. They're closing their eyes and they're breathing. Just notice your body symptoms. Does it feel tighter anywhere in your body? And then see if you can breathe into those places and calm yourself a little bit more. Send out those places some extra oxygen. And then we do the whole body relaxation, one muscle at a time. Relax your neck. Feel it relaxing. Feel it calming down. Relax your shoulders. Relax your toes. We go from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet.
And I think this is so effective because we don't realize that whenever we get anxious, it really expresses itself physically. And some people, most of us, it expresses itself in our neck, our shoulders, our back muscles. For some people, it expresses itself in our stomachs. But we have physical components. You know, there's a lot physiologically that goes on when we get anxious and worried.
And I think one of the most powerful things, I guess, for anyone who is, you know, being challenged by anxiety, is that you empower yourself to calm yourself. If you know that you have the ability to calm yourself better than anyone else in the whole world can help you with it, that's very strong. That's power. You have the power to calm yourself. You have the ability. And after we do muscle relaxation, very often I'll go into a very nice visualization with people. And I teach people about relaxation music. There's a whole relaxation music industry. The music's designed to physiologically slow down the body rhythms. And it's beautiful, and it's peaceful, and it's helpful. It really makes a difference.
And the visualization is something as simple as just picturing a place where you've felt very relaxed and comfortable. It might be sitting at the shore, at the beach. It might be just, you know, remind you of a nice relaxing vacation you once took. And just sitting there and focusing and remembering that experience and trying to really re-experience that in your head. And really gives you the power to show that you can really achieve this sense of calm and relaxation and be sensitive. It becomes more, much more sensitive to understand when your body is being stressed and being anxious and responding to the anxiety.
Right. And I think sometimes people are so disarmed by how silly it seems to be paying attention to their breathing. They think it's utterly ridiculous because we all breathe all the time. And that's true. But, and when we're anxious or when we're really having a hard time managing anxious feelings, we tend to not be breathing properly. We tend to be breathing from, you know, our like our upper chest and up. We're like almost in a hyperventilation mode. And we need, the real good breathing happens from the abdomen. So it's almost just as easy as putting your hand on your stomach and breathing in and out and feeling that movement. And that's how you know you're breathing properly. Very, very simple.
Right. And just by focusing on your breathing, you change your breathing. Okay. And your breathing slows down because you're focused on your breathing. And, you know, these, just teaching a child this is, again, gives them a powerful tool and a powerful message that they can really learn how to do this. I think the, you know, the next step is really problem solving techniques. Okay.
And that addresses, I think, the hypervigilance that we had talked about earlier. And, you know, it's very simple problem solving techniques, because part of what happens when you're so anxious is that your brain stops functioning and can't access those problem solving areas.
Right. So if you, it's simple as talking to your child in a calm way about what they're anxious, what they're worried about. Okay, what the fear is.
Clearly defining the problem.
And then talking about different possible solutions. And really empowering them to come up with different solutions and choose the solutions that they think might work best.
And then you go from thinking about it to putting it into action. Put the best solution into action. What's the best one out of all of those that you brought up? Okay, that's the one. That's the plan of action. That's what we're going to do. And then finally, rewarding yourself for trying the new solution that worked. And that's as simple as being proud of yourself and saying, yes, I did it.
So that, you know, if your child has, you know, it comes home and they're so anxious about, you know, I have this paper to do for school and, you know, I have this project and I can't do it. Okay. And they feel, you know, totally overwhelmed and it's not possible. I am not capable of it. It can't be done. Okay, and you're able to help them. Okay, well, let's talk about the options. Let's talk about what might help you. Let's, you know, give them, you know, you give some suggestions. Maybe we could break it down. Maybe we can get some help with it.
Well, I think that's really important what you just said about breaking it down, because a lot of what the anxious mind does is that it looks at the big picture and is overwhelmed by the enormity of it. That term paper that I have to, oh my gosh, it's just so big, it's bigger than me. But if we bring home the term paper outline and we start breaking it down into, well, on, you know, it's due in 3 weeks. So this is how we're going to work backwards from the day it's due until what the very beginning of it is, and break it down into small pieces so that you know it's manageable. The small pieces are manageable. And then you do one small piece at a time and you finish the project.
So, you know, but we can apply this to any type of fear that kids might have, so that, you know, if a young child is very afraid when their parents go out, right? And so we talk about, what's the fear? Well, I'm afraid you're going to get into an accident, right? Okay, well, we'll talk about some reality tests, but what's going to help you feel calmer than if we're not home? And maybe a kid has a favorite teddy bear, or maybe there's something they can do that helps them feel calmer. Okay? And so let them suggest what helps you feel calmer, and let's use that, okay, and see, go through, figure out different things. Let's pick the best one or the best two, try them, and let's see if that's going to work.
And again, these are all examples of going from powerlessness to empowerment.
Right.
From feeling like you can take charge and you have control.
And then, you know, we talked about children really just get so preoccupied, if you think about something enough, you worry about it enough, it changes and distorts your whole thinking, right? So going back to, you know, this fear of robbers, let's say, is, you know, that's, you know, kids catastrophize. They're sure that disaster is going to happen. And one of the things we have to do is help change their thinking back to decatastrophize.
Right. We always ask those, you know, we kind of question their illogic with a little bit more logic. How likely is this to happen? Has this ever, you know, occurred before in this place?
And that's the idea of this, with, you know, when therapists talk about cognitive therapy, that's thinking therapy, it's using our logic, our thinking, to deal with our emotions. Okay? And that's a very powerful thing that we can do, that we really can use our thinking to manage our emotions better. Okay. And that enables us to reduce the level of the anxiety. So it may not, we don't have to get rid of the anxiety altogether, but if I make it, I'll help myself be less anxious because I can think myself through it, I'm going to be in much better shape to manage it.
Right, like the typical, you know, child who's maybe a little bit separation anxious and is afraid to go to sleepaway camp, but has already been to sleepaway camp successfully, but now is, you know, sleepaway camp is coming up again and they're feeling, you know, worried and anxious about going again. You have to say, well, you know, how was last summer? Well, I had a really good time. What would you like about camp? Well, I really liked the swimming. I liked the arts and crafts. I liked the activities. I liked the food. I liked the counselors. I liked my friends. Oh, so wait a minute. There are a lot of things that you really like about camp.
Yeah, but I remember being homesick.
Right. That's true. Okay, so you had a feeling and you were homesick, but look at all of the positive things that you liked about camp. And you actually did camp last year and you were very successful. So if you focus more on the good in it and what you liked about it and that you have already successfully done it, well, you know, you have to kind of like put the emphasis on where the good is and what your mastery level is.
Or the kid who's afraid they're going to fail the test, right? Well, let's look at this realistically. You know, I'm going to fail the test and my life's going to be over. Well, number one, is your life really going to be over? Okay? And number two, well, how have you done on the other tests in this history class? Well, you're running an 89 average. Well, what's the likelihood that if you've gotten high 80s or 90s on all the other tests, that you're really going to fail this one? You know, is that, you know, and so really, and even if you feel you're not prepared for this test, if you do poorly on one test, how much is that really going to affect your mark? Much moreover, how much is going to affect your future?
Right. Exactly. Like whether the 89, or let's just say it's an 82. Terrible. How, in the big, big scheme of things, is anyone ever going to remember that you got an 82 on a history test? No.
Right. So, you know, really putting things in perspective is very helpful, and you can help your child do that. So you don't want to dismiss their anxiety. You want to help them take their anxiety and work with them to keep it in perspective. Okay. And along with this goes sort of reality testing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Part of it is, you know, I've treated many people who have fear of flying, right? Because they're afraid the plane's going to crash. Realistically, though, how often do planes crash? You know, you're safer flying on a plane than crossing the street. Okay? That's statistically, that's true. Now, we don't feel that way necessarily, but being able to focus on the reality of it is very helpful. Okay? So I have to be, you know, helping a child to see the reality. Okay, you know, if I go to this party, I'm gonna be so embarrassed. Okay, I'm gonna go to the bat mitzvah, and everybody else is gonna be dressed better than me, and I'm gonna be humiliated.
How likely is that to happen?
Right.
When have you ever gone to a party and were wearing the most awkward, awful dress and felt humiliated?
Right. Okay. You know, is what you have to wear really
awful or out of the norm
or inappropriate? Right. Okay, so it wasn't the dress you wanted to wear is dirty now and not available and didn't come back from the cleaners, but meanwhile, what you have is really going to be pretty okay.
Right. Right. And that, again, that's another tool of empowerment.
So I think that's a big part of the goal is really, as you said, you want to empower your child and, you know, make them understand that it's, you know, number one, things are not their fault. They shouldn't start blaming themselves.
Right. And anxious and sensitive children, or sensitive children who tend to be anxious, are very, very likely to think it's their fault, that they did something bad. And maybe this is God's way of punishing them.
And it's interesting because psychologically, people so often ask, like, why would they blame themselves? It's like mom and dad are fighting. Why does a child blame themselves? And if you think about it, though, from a child perspective, it makes a lot of sense. Children feel a lack of control in this world. They're not the ones, you know, who feel in control. They often feel that others control. When bad things happen, they have two ways to interpret it. Either I have no control over it, and therefore this world's a very scary place, or I have control over it, and it's my fault. And very often, it is easier for a child to feel, I have control, it's my fault, than to feel I have no control.
Right, so they'd rather take the blame than sit with the idea that this is totally out of their control.
And in a sense, that's a coping skill, trying to avoid anxiety, thinking that I'm in control, but it doesn't work because with the self-blame makes them feel worse and more anxious than
right.
in the future.
It's counterproductive. So really, the first and foremost is it's not your fault.
Then, you know, you have to understand, you have to help them with understanding that a little bit of anxiety might be okay, but taking it to an extreme doesn't make sense. It's not helpful.
But it's really teaching the difference between the good anxiety and the bad anxiety, the good worries and the bad worries.
Right. If I worry somewhat about to take the test and I study, that's good. If I worry so much about the test that I'm frozen, I can't do anything. Okay, like a young lady who I saw today in college who, you know, got a term paper to do. And, you know, when she first got it, she says, okay, I'll be okay. And then pushed it off and pushed it off. And then it was a week before. Mm. And then she felt, I can't do term papers. I haven't done paper. And she was so frozen, she didn't do the paper. She didn't call the teacher. She didn't do anything. She just froze and did nothing.
Right.
That's the type of anxiety we want to avoid.
And the procrastination people tend to run a little bit more on the anxious side of life because they're so afraid to even get started. So that's where, when you can teach children that we break it down into small, manageable parts, and that's anything across the life cycle. You know, making a holiday like Pesach at home, you break it down into small pieces. It's pieces. It's doable. But if you think about the large picture and everything you have to do all at once, well, it's overwhelming.
Right. So, you know, the ability to have that skill and to learn how to look at something and not say, oh, there's too much, I don't want to think about it, I'll push it off, but rather to really tackle it, okay, and break it down and make it manageable for yourself. That reduces anxiety.
There's a lovely young lady that I'm working with now who is a senior in high school, but we're taking her schedule, her end of the year schedule, and we literally do it day by day, what she's going to study when, how many hours she's going to study when. And she said that is her Bible. She opens up that page every morning and she looks at what she has to do. And as long as she knows what she has to do when, she's fine. She's not anxious. She can proceed with her day.
Right. And that's a great tool to reduce anxiety for kids who are anxious. Once I know that I've planned it out, I don't have to be anxious about it anymore. I just have to follow the plan.
Right.
Okay. Again, a way of empowerment. Okay. Letting children, talking to them about their anxiety, so helping them understand what they're afraid of, discussing it, analyzing it, so they understand what they're afraid of, letting them know that they can manage this, that they can use these tools that we just talk about, the problem solving, the cognitive techniques.
And relaxation.
And the relaxation to manage their own anxiety. And that they can ask for help if they need it.
Right. I think that's also a very, very good point of asking for help if you need it. Not to rely on somebody else to do it for you, because that's the overprotection piece, but asking for help and knowing that you don't necessarily have to do it all by yourself. You're not alone in this. you have parents that they support you. They'll give you the tools. They'll help you. They'll go over the techniques with you.
Now, having said all this, I think it's important to put in that, you know, you can try to help your child, and I think very effectively do so with these approaches. And there's some very good books on helping your children with anxiety that you can get that give you, you know, sort of step-by-step approaches to this. But if your child remains still anxious and hasn't been to school in a week or has obsessive thoughts about something and, you know, like the typical obsessive-compulsive hand-washing or anything like that, where they're spending more than a few minutes a day on behaviors and worry that really get in their way of their functioning, you know, or they're really avoiding normal activities and these techniques aren't working, then you really need to get them professional help. You need to be, you know, don't wait and think, oh, it's just a passing phase. It'll disappear. I mean, I've known kids who were selectively mute. They didn't talk in class for a year or two. And nobody did, you know, the school didn't complain because they're not troublemakers. They wrote their answers on the tests, on the quizzes. And, but it's really disabling for a child. And it's the type of thing you want to treat sooner rather than later. Because the longer anxiety sticks around, the more entrenched it becomes that you start thinking in those ways. And so you don't want significant anxiety to just be sitting there. You really want to treat it. And if you can do it, that's great. And that's what we want to help you with. But if you find you're not successful doing it, don't hesitate to ask for help.
Right. And it is treated very, very successfully.
Right. Ultimately, people really can learn to manage their anxiety. And the sooner you start, the easier it is to treat. Okay, and the more successfully you're going to treat it with less work, not more. We hope this has been helpful. We thank you for listening today to How to Help Your Children with Their Anxiety. This is Dr. Barry Holzer.
And Hani Holzer.
Thank you for tuning in to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact us at parentisaverb@ouradio.org.